This is the Paula Gordon Show, conversations with people at the leading edge. I am Paula. Bill Russell is here. Today, our leading edge person is E.L. Doctorow. I had a friend take us to see Ragtime on Broadway. And when it was over, the crowd, of course, stood and they cheered. And I'd read Ragtime many years before. And I was simply mute. I was stunned. I was overwhelmed. I just couldn't talk, which is for me an unusual state. And she couldn't understand because this was supposed to be fun and gay. And I said, what comes next is the 20th century. And it was just so overpowering to see this. And it's really, as you say, with the march, you know, what's going to come next? Joe Johnston and General Joe Johnston and what this rage will be out of the white losing side of the Civil War in America. That sense that what comes next is so strong in what you're telling me, and yet you never tell me what comes next. And I know that you intend these as standalone, but these couldn't be as powerful to me, it seems. Well, maybe they could. But if you don't know where this leads, it's sort of the function of history, I guess. It sort of amplifies the beauty and power of the book, knowing what comes next, doesn't it?
Oh, yeah. The most suspenseful stories are the ones whose ending we know.
But that's counterintuitive to most people.
Well, I mean, the Greek playwrights would have an audience that knew they were working from myths, that knew the way the story of Oedipus Rex ended, for instance. And the suspense was almost unbearable. He said, stop, don't do what you're doing. Wait. I don't know. I'm not sure if that's what you're talking about.
Yeah, exactly. About. Exactly. How can you write such suspenseful novels when we know all of that which is going to happen? But I think that is the answer, isn't it?
Yeah, I think so. It's much more powerful for a reader to know the ending in advance than to be surprised by it, I think. Something more basic and central to the compact between the writer and the reader in telling a story that everyone knows, and just finding more to it, perhaps, than other people have thought about.
Well, and it's the more to it, mm-hmm. I think, that is just so stunningly attractive, because, you know that the, if you have had the chance to learn some history, you know the broad outlines of the events, but we tend to do events and, you know, a great man and events view of history. And this makes it ambiguous, it makes it muddy, it makes it complex, it makes it rich, and it makes it personal for all those reasons. And as much as anything, at least for me, that the richness of it, the complexity of the characters, even the really bad ones, tells me something about where we came from and also where we are.
Yeah, I thought for a minute you were talking about only about chronology among the books, but the reason I thought of that is because someone pointed out to me that all these books can be arranged in order, something I never planned or even thought about. And you end up covering, if you want to, if this is 150 years of American life. But it's sort of astonishing to me that that is a possible way to read these, but we begin with the march and then, I guess, go on to Welcome to Hard Times,
right,
which is post-Civil War in the West, or then you come up to Tweed's New York with the waterworks, and then you do Ragtime around the turn of the century. Then there are three novels that take place in the 1930s, Billy Bathgate, World's Fair, Loon Lake, and then the Book of Daniel, which goes into the 60s, and then...
Well, it covers the 40s and 50s,
yeah,
and then goes into the 60s.
And then City of God, which is contemporary, sort of,
well, I'm
from
waiting.
World War II to right. present. So, but I didn't plan any of that, and I'm not sure that I would want to read the books that way. But
because...
But there it is.
Well, I would much rather read them out of order. I mean, part
well,
of
that's
it,
the way they were written.
That's
order.
Part of it, but there's, you know, we do so much linear, and we get sort of trapped in the linearities of our of history, which suggests that there are these neat little continuities and reasons somehow or other is the dominant characteristic, and that's just not true.
Yeah, right. But I think I've been susceptible to this kind of thing, concept, because I've always, very early on, I discovered that a period of time was as much an organizing principle for a novel as a place. And having grown up in New York City, a generally urban, terribly volatile place, I've never felt that I had a literary identity conferred on me the way someone in Mississippi might, or Indiana, or Montana, although obviously there are New York novels. It's all Bello possible. Seize the Day, The Upper West Side, Isaac Bashevis Singer, and so on. But I've used New York because there's a particular time when the national identity was hottest at that place. And so there are time things with all these books. And that's the way it's worked out.
One of the ways of defining a culture is by the stories it tells, the stories it repeats, the ones it believes, the ones it rejects. And to me, a lot of the appeal of this body of work is that the stories you tell, because of the little evil genius you have that wants to tweak the world a little bit, these are stories that are in some ways more honest than the histories we have been telling ourselves, the hagiographies that most of us grew up with.
Hagiography is a wonderful, that's a witchy kind of word. I love the word.
The idea that that all Americans were great except, of course, the ones that were bad, but it's a very, you know, George Washington was a great man, Thomas Jefferson was a great man, Abraham Lincoln, unambiguously. And the richness you bring to this and the ambiguity of it and the fact that none of these are – and Sherman's a good example of that, except here in the South, in Atlanta. But Sherman is, for most of us, I think, just a cardboard cutout. And yet there is, as you present it, and I think as he was, a rich, complex, tormented human who was trying to do something very necessary and very important. But we need to understand that richness rather than the naive caricatures and comic strips that we've become accustomed to.
Well, there are aggregate fictions we all live by, and it seems to me that, without getting too grandiose about it, that a good novel breaks down that aggregate fiction and competes with it in some way. And I think that's useful. I mean, when you start writing, you don't say, well, I'm going to do this for society, I'm going to do that for society. You're just writing, and you're doing it for yourself and hoping that someone will listen.
And the aggregate fiction on this one is that cardboard cutout, Gone with the Wind kind of stuff from the Civil War?
Well, I wasn't thinking of Gone with the Wind. In fact, I've never read it. I did see the movie. But it's true that historically the march is a sort of sequel. Because this is what Sherman did after he burned Atlanta. And he had to persuade Grant and the chief of staff, General Halleck, that this was a good idea. He had some arguing to do.
There are those who say that Gone with the Wind and Birth of a Nation are right at the heart of all of the problems we've had after the Civil War in reaching any kind of justice for African Americans, people who are not lily white and or not Irish, that those cardboard cutouts have polluted the national character and conversation. And in a way, this offsets those myths.
Well, I think the more what keeps a society democratic and alive is a multiplicity of witnesses. And to have hope to have a kind of consensual reality build up inch by inch over decades and generations because you're getting so many different views. That's why today, with the conglomeration of the media into fewer and fewer corporate hands, writing independent writers are becoming more important. Books now are the least censored form we have of communicating, I think. And except, of course, for lively interview conversational shows on the radio.
Thank you very much. This is E.L. Doctorow. We'll let him continue in that vein when we come back in a moment.
We will encourage him.
This is the Paul and Gordon Show. Be with us in a moment when we do return.